That's before the patient ever gets there. So it isn't one of these afterthoughts that somebody picks up this information and says, oh, yeah, the patient just walked in. Let me take a look at who she is here. But the receiver really has studied the patient information and current status. Third thing is that the handoff is considered to be so important that while it is going on, nobody interrupts the handoff process. So it's not one of these things where somebody comes in and a new patient sort of arrives on your doorstep and then being transferred from detox and somebody says, oh, excuse me, I've got a call I need to take. There's no interruption during the handoff process because it's critical. Things are not handled by paperwork. Things are handled face to face. And there's a consistent order of presentation of the information. You don't just have a bunch of stuff that's handed over in a pile to a patient, to the receiver. There's a consistent order. They know exactly what's coming in what order. And there's a clear signal that the handoff has occurred and that the receiver has received the patient. Now, I'm talking about this and sometimes, you know, it's easy to get sort of wrapped up in a conversation of this type and leave with the impression that we're just a bunch of dunderheads in the field and we're not doing our job in transfer. Nothing can be further from the truth in addiction. I mean, people all over have looked at what could be done to try to improve the handoffs. And in the next slide, there is a brief story about Manatee Glens in Bradenton, Florida, and how they've moved patients from detox to outpatient. And this does a couple of interesting things. The first thing it does is it looks at rapid cycle change. It shows how you try something and it works a little bit, and then you try something else and it works a little bit better, and you try something else and it works a little bit better, and you go through these cycles until you have a really smooth running process. At baseline, Manatee Glen, 66% of the patients didn't show for up at outpatient after being discharged from detox. And Manatee Glens felt this was too big a drop in the handoff process. So one of the things that they tried was they said, okay, I'm going to have the outpatient staff come in and meet patients while they're still in detox to introduce them to the outpatient program. And they tried that, and it didn't have any effect. So they said, well, we got to try something else. So then what happened was they used recovery coaches or recovering coaches, people who had been through the program, who had experienced it themselves, come in and talk to the patients in detox and invite them to come. And no-shows reduced from 66 to 37%. By the way, the recovery coaches were trained extensively in what to say and how to say it and this kind of stuff in order to do this. The third changes was that they continued to use the recovery coach idea to come in and invite people. But one day prior to when the transfer should be taking place, there were reminder calls sent to the patient asking them if they would be there, if they could go, and that dropped the no-show rate from 66 to 37 to 30%. And then finally, they decided that they would, if you had four patients who were being discharged and hopefully transferred over to the outpatient service. Not only were there recovery coaches that contacted them and reminder calls were made. But the patients in detox came as a group rather than as individuals. And then when this was all aggregated together, the no-show rate dropped from 66 to 26%. So a drop of, well, humongous percentage rate down to about a quarter from two-thirds of these people. So I guess the final thing I'd be inclined to say is on the next slide, and that is that, you know, as I've gone around and talked with people and looked at our field of addiction treatment and compared it to other fields, I think we've got an awful lot going for us that can lead us to dramatically improve the handoff process. First thing is, you know, we're a mission-driven field. I mean, more than any other field, and I've said this hundreds of times, but more than any other field I've ever been associated with, this one really personifies the concept of being mission-driven. We care about the patients. we have passion and commitment to make a difference in their life. Many of the people who work in this field see it as a lifestyle or a calling, not a job. And because the tools and the knowledge are out there on how to do good handoffs, I'm really convinced that we can do it. You know, the key is going to be for us to take it seriously, to really set a high priority on doing this well, to not get into the patient blaming kind of thing, but to believe that it's our processes that can make a difference. And then for us to begin to follow some of the guiding principles that are coming from myriads of fields across the whole spectrum of industry and how to do that. And if we do it, you know, I'm convinced we're going to be able to pass this ball as well as anybody, even Brett Favre. So that's the end of my talk, Kim.
Thank you, Dave. We have a few minutes for questions or comments, so I'm going to open up the lines for everybody. Hang on one second. Okay, I think we have everyone on. Does anyone have a question or a comment?
Yes, I have a question. Hello?
Yep.
This is Sheila Denny from Nashville, Tennessee, the Elam Mental Health Center, where we have residential treatment as well as IOP and OP. The fourth change where the detox comes as a group, so everyone who is being handed over, in other words, to the next stage comes together, and they all start together to be able to encourage one another because they know one another, that seems to have a beneficial effect.
That's how I would interpret it.
Yeah, actually, you know what? Manatee Glens is actually presenting on, I think it's the December call on there. Dave, I didn't know you were that was going to be on your slides, but we have a person from that agency that is going to, I think it is our next transitions call, is going to present on their specific changes. So if you
cool.
get on next month, you can ask one of them how they got to that point. And,
okay.
Yeah, but I think you're absolutely right. I think it's you know, you probably much more than I do know the power of strength and numbers and this kind of stuff. And if I have to go someplace and I have to go by myself, I'm a little bit afraid and maybe wonder whether I want to do it or can do it. But if I know that I'm going with three other people,
mm-hmm.
and they all need the same thing I need, and we've all made the commitment together, then they may set up a different kind of mindset.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
I have a comment.
Yep. Go ahead.
I want to thank you all. This is the first time I've sat in on one of these. This is Helen from California. I enjoy a good sports metaphor as much as the next person. And I just wanted to comment, this is such an isolated field that I found that the presentation and all of you just being there quite comforting, in that we think these are our problems in this county and in this agency, and that we don't have to reinvent the wheel, but we're actually all working on the same issues at the same time. So thank you very much.
Thank you, and I really appreciate, for those of you who are on the call, taking the time to do this. I mean, it shows your interest and commitment to what, you know, I'm beginning to learn is just an incredibly important issue. So thank you.
Hi, this is Stephanie Moles from the Woman's Heart in Casper, Wyoming, and ditto on the comment that was just made. And I feel very affirmed in hearing that people realize that the transition is everything, that it's, you know, those high points of relapse, you know, positive, constructive, good, wholesome treatment, and then boom, she's drunk in 3 days. My agency is called The Woman's Heart, and we are a peer-led agency providing recovery support services and case management services. In that process, you know, being supportive to a recovery-oriented system of care where we all need to be talking at the same time and working together, we're just now, you know, getting different agencies to, you know, do bilateral consent forms so we can talk about these shared clients. But there still seems to be some resistance. And I don't want to say resistance. That's really a negative term. I think it's just fear of the unknown or, well, you know, you're not clinical, so you can't be part of this. I don't think it's based out of meanness, but I think it's just, you know, we're evolving, and I think the value of having a recovery coach is becoming more and more known, and people are starting to change the dynamics a little bit. What have you found in your experience as you continue to look at this field and the areas that we can increase access to treatment and the transition out of treatment, embracing recovery coaches and embracing new ideas like that?
Kim, I'm going to need some help from you on this, because, you know, I don't know a lot about what I'm talking about in general, and I certainly don't know a lot about this particular issue. The sense I get is that the recovery coach is, at least in the few agencies that I'm close enough to, that I've talked to them about recovery coaches, they sound to me like they are a centerpiece in their approach to treatment. And it does sound like it's fairly new in the last 3 or 4 years. But I don't know, Kim, or maybe others of you on the call, what experience have you had on this?
I can jump in, but if anybody else has some thoughts, please go ahead.
I'm Ches Wise. I work with Motivate for Success. We are recovery coaches. And in our experience trying to partner up, most facilities, it's not my problem, it's the patient's problem.
Uh-huh.
There's a real harsh attitude, especially here in California.
That whole issue of it's the patient's problem is just, you know, it's so central. It flies so much in the face of the fundamental principles of quality improvement that Duran and Crosby and Deming, you know, every once in a while a principle jumps out at you as being something that is not argued among by the gurus, but is wholly, you know, endorsed and supported. And golly, that is one of them. And it is counterintuitive in many cases, but it's one of those things that people just have to try to get behind and beyond and see it from a different perspective. It's the process, not the problem, not the patient.
I know we have used peers here in Nashville. And one of the problems is that many of them didn't have, you know, like recognized degrees. And in this field, and sometimes when you're in medical settings, those without a degree are not valued.
Yeah.
You know, even though they have lived the experience. We call them peer educators. We also have what we call LCMs, locator case management assistants. But they're on the front line. You know, they're the foot soldiers.
Yeah. so true.
There are a number of models where having a person in recovery or recently having been through treatment do that, help with that transfer. Even Sacramento has a child welfare program, child welfare substance abuse program, where they use people in recovery who have been through, have been involved with the child welfare system, who are, you know, that you can call them case managers, you can call them recovery support coaches. There are lots of different words that people use, but they're the ones that take the person by the hand and walk them from, actually in that instance, from the court to the treatment facility across the street. So there are a lot of models, and it seems to be having someone who has lived through the experience relatively recently, you know, having them know what it's like, having that be the person that helps with the transfer seems to make a difference. And it's interesting because our field sort of started that way. And as we've professionalized, just saying that in quotes, we've moved away from valuing that.
Thank you. That was a great comment. And that is, this is how we used to do it. And, you know, it was on the ground work. It was that frontline work that's really the most that was able to be offered to the community who wanted to recover. And, you know, that hospitals would even take alcoholics, let alone, you know, intravenous drug users. So the field has changed drastically over the years. And I think it's now circling back the other way that, you know, where we can build relationships. And as was mentioned by the Motivate for Success woman, I think sometimes it's terminology that opens the door for some of the work that we're doing. We're producing some numbers, and so state people like numbers. Some of the clinical people like numbers. You know, we've got some data I'm working on this morning. We're having close to a 70% abstinent rate, not perfect abstinence, but in a 12-month period, 67% of the people we're working with are still clean. And we talk about case management services, helping with locating a job and housing and childcare. And so once they start seeing numbers and data that supports the process, then they're a little bit easier to have extended conversations with. So if anybody's out there doing that recovery work and can collect the data, it's just an encouragement.
We have a couple more minutes, so any other comments, thoughts, or questions? Probably there's time for one or two more. Okay, last chance. Well, Dave, I just want to thank you again for doing this talk. It's sponsored some good conversation, and it will go up on the web, and other people can listen in.